This show is brought to you by OffWorldDesigns.com. OffWorldDesigns.com is the place where you can find the nerdiest t-shirts and more at prices that won't break the bank. OffWorldDesigns.com offers shirts from all fandoms and hobbies, and even some other pretty cool stuff like messenger bags that can hold your plus one sort of awesome and so much more. You can use promo code GEEKSRULE to get 10% off your entire order. OffWorldDesigns.com is a proud sponsor of ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. Games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of This Week in Geek. This Week in Geek.
Greetings, students of ThisWeekInGeek.net. I am your teacher today at Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters. I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, and this is, of course, the topic show for the month of May, airing in June, because reasons. I'm Mike Dodd, but I'm joined with Andrew.
Hello, how's it going?
I'm going well. Now, for some reason, whenever you introduce yourself, you're always Andrew Randrew Roebuck. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, that's usually it. That comes from, like, an episode of the Untitled Mike and Laura Project where they accidentally called me Randrew, so it was just kind of an ongoing gag with that.
See, I've been wondering literally for, like, a year, like, what the fuck is he saying? I just didn't know. But anyway, so yes, we're going to be talking about X-Men this month. We're going to be talking about the movies, the comics. We can even talk about the video games for this as well. There's so much to cover. So that being said, disclaimer, there are going to be some spoilers for X-Men Days of Future Past. I'm presuming, Andrew, you've seen this.
Oh, I've seen it.
Okay. So be forewarned now. There's going to be spoilers about the comics, spoilers about, basically, spoilerific. You've been friggin' warned. And yeah, we're pretty much going to do this. Now, also, another caveat is, as far as I know, neither me or Andrew are super experts on this. And comic lore is one of those things you either get right or you get wrong. So if we make some mistakes, that's just the way it is. You're going to have to live with it. But we love the X-Men. It's one of our favorite properties. It's been one of mine since the 90s. So with all that in mind, I got to thank our sponsors of OffWorldDesigns.com, BigAtallMart.com, SFI.org, Starfleet, the world's largest Star Trek online fan club, GameAccess.ca, and pretty sure I haven't left anybody out, but if I did, I apologize. I'll check at the end of the show. So anyway, guys, before we take a tuition test to go to Xavier's School for Gifted Youngsters, here are just the facts. In September of 1963, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby would create a superhero team that would rise above any that had come before it. The X-Men are a group of superpowered teenagers that gained their abilities through mutation, giving them the moniker of mutants. The original lineup of the team consisted of Cyclops, Jean Grey, Iceman, Beast, and Angel. The team was formed by Professor Xavier, a wheelchair-bound mutant with the power of telepathy. Originally, the X-Men served as a civil rights allegory, with Professor Xavier representing Martin Luther King Jr., and the arch-nemesis of the X-Men Magneto, Master of Magnetism, representing Malcolm X. Upon initial release, the X-Men were not a huge hit, and due to dwindling sales, the book was canceled at issue 66. For 5 years, the X-Men languished in reprints until they were revived by Len Wein and artist David Cockrum. Len Wein introduced a new team dubbed the Uncanny X-Men with members from across the world. He introduced the most popular mutant lineup: Cyclops, Colossus, Nightcrawler, Storm, Thunderbird, Banshee, Sunfire, and the most popular, Wolverine. From here, the series was helmed by the great X-Men scribe Chris Claremont. Under Claremont's X-Men, some of the most popular stories were written, including Days of Future Past, the Dark Phoenix Saga, were among the most prominent. The Phoenix Saga ended with the death of Jean Grey, an original X-Men and longtime love interest of Scott Summers, aka Cyclops. The 80s would also introduce the X-Men to its most famous artist, Canadian John Byrne. Byrne took a particular liking to the character of Wolverine and opted to bring him more into the forefront of the X-Men, giving the character many of the coolest moments, ramping up his already skyrocketing popularity. Rounding into the 90s, we would see the X-Men's biggest surge of popularity. The X-Men got their first successful animated series in 1992, and X-Men number 1, written by Chris Claremont and Jim Lee, had a whopping 8.1 million pre-orders. The X-Men remained big throughout the 90s, participating in mega crossovers like Age of Apocalypse and Onslaught. At this point in X-Men history, there were multiple mutant teams with multiple agendas, X-Force being the most well-known. While the series was popular through the 90s and the early 2000s, revamped the characters by having new X-Men titles helmed by popular writers like Grant Morrison and Joss Whedon. This was also when the X-Men had their first feature film appearance, directed by Bryan Singer. The film franchise is continuing up to this day, featuring many popular X-Men throughout its seven films. The X-Men still retain over 40 years of popularity in comics today, with the majority of X-Men comics being written by Marvel writer Brian Michael Bendis. The first official cartoon appearance of the X-Men was in the Marvel Superhero Show, where they place a brief cameo. They later appeared in the cartoon Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, who had Iceman featured in one of the lead three roles. It wouldn't be until 1989 that they had a cartoon series entirely devoted around them. Pride of the X-Men was never aired past its original pilot, and fans criticized some of the changes to the mutant lore. Wolverine was Australian, but did have a huge effect on the X-Men arcade game, which featured all the characters and costumes from the show. From here, they would get their first real success with the X-Men animated series, which ran for 5 years and was very popular. Throughout the 2000s, they would continue to make new cartoons like X-Men Evolution and Wolverine and the X-Men, but none were as popular as the 1992 animated series. With a plethora of video games and a recently feature film, X-Men Days of Future Past, the X-Men aimed to keep the mutant era marching on, and hopefully mutants and humans alike can coexist.
Alrighty, thanks Mike for giving us some of the backstory on our favorite team of mutants. Now let's start off with a simple question, Mike. Who's the best X-Men? What mutant is better than all the rest?
Well, the obvious answer is Wolverine because, you know, for a guy who's a loner, he's on like a million different teams.
yeah, he has got to be a Time Lord because there is no way that he can possibly be in that many pieces of the Marvel Universe at once. He's done everything.
I'm pretty sure he just doesn't sleep because he wanders between the X-Men, the Defenders, the Avengers, fucking Tiny Tim's Coffee Club or whatever. You know, he's literally everywhere. The best mutant, man, that's a hard one because I could go with Jean Grey because she is an Omega level mutant. She houses the Phoenix Force, which means she's basically a cosmic force of nature. But she's fucking crazy. I'm going to say Professor X himself.
Oh, that's a good choice. I've always been partial to Nightcrawler. I love me some Nightcrawler. I just love how he's so quick and just, like, teleporting is such, like, an awesome mutant ability, especially when it's done right. It's kind of a mutant ability that, like, a lot of different mutants have, but Nightcrawler seems to use it the best and make the most agile and awesome things to do with it.
He just has the most style with it.
Exactly, and he's blue. So
if you'd asked me that question a different way, who's my favorite mutant, my answer is going to surprise you.
Don't say Dazzler.
Not Dazzler, but I don't mind her. My favorite X-Men is actually Jubilee.
Well, that's interesting. I'm kind of indifferent on Jubilee. I don't really have any, like, I don't hate Jubilee, but I don't love Jubilee. I was always kind of not a big fan of her, and the only, well, that's a lie. indifferent towards her. The only real experience I had with Jubilee was from the X-Men TV show, and she didn't really wow me in that.
See, I think that's probably why I liked her, is because of the X-Men TV show on Fox, which we will talk about towards the end of the show. There's something about, I liked how she was the young kid, the person you're supposed to, I guess, put yourself in the shoes of. There's just something, I also love her character design. I love the pink sunglasses, the yellow raincoat. I don't know, I just thought it looked cool for whatever reason, and I kind of thought she was hot, so whatever.
She is probably the most colorful mutant. Like, the way that her powers work really works well to, like, have a all-encompassing palette of colors.
So. Mm-hmm. Fireworks. Now, one of the other questions that has to be asked, since we've talked about favorite, who's our least favorite?
Dazzler. Dazzler's the worst thing to ever come into history.
What's wrong with Dazzler?
She just sings. Oh, I sing and I turn sounds into light. I'm Dazzler.
But think about that. That's actually
She's a disco reject that was just made in order to for Marvel to try and get a disco audience. They tried to, like, make records with her back in the day, and I just, like, other than her powers, like, her powers are one thing. I just really find her character and the way she talks and acts just completely annoying and just angers me to no end.
I will give you that her character sucks. I think her powers are actually kind of cool.
Yeah, apparently she once took down Galactus. One of my friends was telling me that.
What?
Because, do you know the Fantastic Four villain Claw, which is like the sound villain?
Yeah.
He, like, attacks her, and he doesn't real, and, like, he's been, like, powered up by Dr. Doom, or he's powered up more than usual, and he attacks her without realizing her powers, so she takes in all of his energy and, like, fights off Galactus. That's what someone told me once. I can't really verify that, but I was like, what? Well, whatever. I think my favorite thing with Dazzler is in the recent X-Men event, there was, Bendis wrote a big one. Anyways, in it, she becomes president and dies in a future scene, and I got so happy when she gets assassinated.
You're a terrible person. Now, I'd say my least favorite...
Oh, Battle of the Atom is what that is. Sorry.
When I think back to some of the many varied factions of the X-Men, there's, like, X-Force, X-Factor...
Excalibur,
Generation X... I never much cared for Skin. I think that was his name. You could just generate a lot of Skin. I also thought Husk was kind of stupid, too. Never much cared for a lot of the younger mutants except for Jubilee.
I thought do you know Armor? She's kind of cool.
See, that's the thing. There are so many now. I don't know who the fuck... any of them are anymore, and I haven't for a number of years. Although, when I was into them, I was into the X-Men probably during the 90s the most. I'm only now starting to come back.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read much old-school X-Men, like, in the 90s or 80s, but I have a pretty good grasp of, like, the early stuff, and I'm really liking all the 2000 stuff, and they've been doing some great stuff with X-Men nowadays, but the 90s are kind of my X-Men blind spot.
I kind of like how you called the 90s X-Men old school. I'm thinking like Chris Claremont in the 80s old school, or even the stuff from the 60s. Now, I actually have read some books from the 60s, thanks to the wonders of digital and trade paperback. I think I've read up to issue 15.
Oh, nice.
Which I know the Sentinels appear in like that stretch, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess that leads to our next question. Favorite X-Men bad guy?
Oh, well, I'm not going to be very... It's really hard for me to not choose Magneto. Okay, I'm going to say Magneto is my end-all be-all, but I'm going to give another little nod to kind of an underrated X-Men villain, because he's kind of used for more of a joke than anything else. I love Toad. I really, really love Toad. And I just, most of my love for Toad comes from this first X-Men movie where he just, like, dances around and doesn't give a shit. He just is, like, half the scenes in that movie, he's just doing a weird dance, puking on characters, using his tongue to mess people up. He just doesn't care. He's Toad. He's badass.
See, I think it was the first X-Men movie that made that character even remotely cool.
Yeah, I don't think I've read much with Toad. I know that in Wolverine and the X-Men, the recent X-Men series, they made Toad the janitor. So Toad doesn't get much love in the comic books.
Like, I hated his early design, that fucking Quasimodo-looking motherfucker.
I think that looks awesome. Like, in Pride of the X-Men, he looks hilarious.
Oh, my God. And there's something else no one ever talks about, but once again, end of the show, we'll talk about the cartoon. For me, my favorite X-Men bad guy has got to be, these guys got lots of love in the most recent X-Men movie. I love Sentinels. My God, do I love the Sentinels. I actually, when I was in college, went out of my damn way. Marvel has this series of figures called Marvel Legends.
Yep.
They're 6.5-inch scale figures, usually really good articulation, really good sculpts, fantastic stuff. I went out of my way to get the Sentinel Wave, which had, like, Omega Red in it, Black Panther. I know there was someone else who sucked in that line. Basically, that particular series of figures wasn't very good. But I got my buildable Sentinel, which stands about, I think, 16 inches tall. He stands, if you compared him to Titan-class Metroplex, he comes up to just below his chest, just partway up his chest, and he's taller than the Apocalypse buildable figure as well. However, the Sentinels are kind of a cop-out when you really think about it, because, well, you know,
they have, like, the coolest design ever, like, and they're robots, but, like, they're not really mind, like, they don't really have a mind of their own, but Sentinels have the coolest designs.
You could argue Nimrod, and you could argue Master Mold, but neither here nor there. My favorite X-Men villain, though, is Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Apocalypse is pretty amazing.
I love the fact that he's pretty much the first mutant. He's pretty much godlike in power, and he has this massive superiority complex. One of my favorite quotes out of the X-Men cartoon, and man, we should talk about that sooner as opposed to later, because I think often we bring it up. He says to me, "I am as far beyond mutants as they are beyond you." And I think this is in the episode where Angel becomes Archangel. He says, "I will bring the purity of oblivion to your world." I love that. If I was an evil mutant, I'd be following that motherfucker.
That dude is just all kinds of awesome. Like, I love how he has, like, the Horseman of the Apocalypse. And, like, he is a really good big bad X-Men villain who hasn't been used in a while. Like, he's kind of lingered in the background.
Well, I think one of the best storylines involving him, and I guess we'll start to talk about comics now, is the Age of Apocalypse. This was a huge storyline in the late 90s, and I really fell in love with it. It's just one of those timelines. Basically, think, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, the Days of Future Past involves time travel and what happens if Senator Kelly is killed, whatever. The Age of Apocalypse is, what if Xavier died and the dream died with him? And basically, the X-Men get their asses kicked very, very early on. Apocalypse takes over North America. People like Spider-Man, the Fantastic Four, basically people that are mutates, people that were like secondary mutations, either through exposure to gamma or radiation or whatever, are dead.
And, oh, wow.
And Apocalypse is taken over. And he's got, like, the army of Sentinels patrolling North America. He's turned Cyclops and Havoc into his, like, alkalites. Wolverine's still around. Sabretooth is a good guy.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. It's really, really good. I went out of my way in college to pick up the trade paperbacks for them. There are like five. They are so worth it. And I'm probably recounting part of this wrong, but you get to see a more human side of Sabretooth, and you also see a different version of Annihilus too, which is really surprising because Blink gets transported to his world somehow in the negative zone or something, and you see Annihilus as a young man.
And, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool. And she's like, no, you can be a good person. And he's like, no, this is my destiny. If I remember that correctly. I honestly didn't get a chance to reread the series before I came on the show today. But yeah, that was a huge storyline. Now, the comics, as I mentioned during Just the Facts, have been going since 1963, I think it is. And there's been a lot of really big storylines. I mean, the X-Men were actually canceled for a little while. And it wasn't really until Giant Size X-Men that the more modern era came out. And you got the big X-Men like Wolverine, who was originally just a one-off character in Hulk 180. And then a full appearance in Hulk 181. He became there. There was Colossus, the guy who could turn into organic steel. Warbird, who didn't last very long.
But he had a brother, his brother came along eventually.
Yep, because, you know, us natives in comic books tend to get screwed over real fast. Let me see, who else was on the team? Nightcrawler.
Storm,
and
Banshee.
Why
Moira Banshee?
Which, I really liked that book, actually. Basically, the original X-Men had been captured by the mutant island of Krakatoa, I think it is. And yep. they kick its ass, and they're like, we need to join forces. We need to be the new X-Men. And, you know, basically modern stories would follow. There'd be the Kree-Skull War. Events like that would happen. The big Days of Future Past storyline.
Which is only two issues in the comic book series. Like, if they had made the Days of Future Past storyline nowadays, it would be like seven issues and there'd be 15 crossovers.
Which, that's something that really hurt a lot of the X-Men comics. Like, when I started reading, I came into the series probably about 92, give or take. And it's just one of those things, like, everything crossed over in the 90s and it was polybag foil variant covers or whatever. There was like a million different retailer incentives, and the comic industry was in a real shitty place then. And one of my favorite storylines, and I'm gonna catch heat for this, is Onslaught. Onslaught,
oh, really?
Is probably, next to Apocalypse, my favorite Marvel bad guy, because I love the fact that he's the psychic, he's all the repressed emotions of Charles Xavier and the rage and the ambition of Magneto. If there was ever a worse cocktail to have, it would be that. And the fact that Onslaught was so powerful, it took most of the Marvel Universe to try and even remotely take him down. And yet, the Fantastic Four died during it. Captain America died. Fantastic Four died. And they were reborn in pocket universes with that whole
Heroes Reborn, oh god.
What a bunch of shit. There was that. Another one that I remember, simply because each issue came polybagged and came with a trading card, was a series called The Executioner's Song. And The Executioner's Song was Xavier gets shot by a guy named Strife. Strife is like a clone of Cable. Basically, that's what happens.
Oh my gosh, that's so complicated. Like, first you have to understand who Cable is. Then there has to be a clone of Cable. If you're like a new reader picking that up, you'd be like, what?
Yeah, because that's what I was. I was like, what the hell's going on? And it turns out that the bullet that shot Xavier, because Strife decided to look like Cable while doing this, was the techno-organic virus from the future. So they have to talk to Apocalypse. They're like, you need to help us. And it's really weird because, and it turns out Strife is teamed up with like Mr. Sinister, and it gets ridiculous. And he does it for a canister of the Summer's DNA from 2,000 years in the future. where Cable's from, more or less. So it turns nuts, basically. And Apocalypse at one point begs Archangel to mercy kill him.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the scenes that sticks out in my mind, I remember this series of panels, is Apocalypse is crawling along the floor, bleeding out. And Archangel's like, you're not even worth my time. And he walks out. And it was just like, oh my god, you can't. And this is when the X-Men cartoon was still heavily in, on the air. And I'm like, holy shit, man, that's really cool. And yeah, it was really friggin' intense that they would do this. I went to my first Comic-Con to pick up my first comics for X-Men, and it was held at the Owen Sound Legion back in the day. So, and the first issue I picked up was everybody has this in some capacity. I wish I still had mine. I actually may rebuy it at some point. Was X-Men number one with the pencils drawn by Jim Lee.
Oh, yeah.
And it was that three-piece cover that basically would fold out and make a giant poster. Which you could also get the artwork at Pizza Hut.
Really? That's a weird connection.
Yeah, because the Pizza Hut was doing a promotion with the animated series at the time, and on their cups, on the cola cups or whatever, they'd have the artwork from the X-Men animated, or from the X-Men number one. They'd have Magneto out stretching his hand, you'd have Cyclops and Wolverine on the cover, then there was like Gambit and like Beast or something, and Psylocke. So yeah, it was really, really cool. And that's when I think some of the best X-Men artwork came out, was from the Jim Lee era. A lot of memorable covers from then. A lot of interesting storylines came out. But I babbled on enough. Let's talk about the comics that you're more familiar with, Andrew.
Unfortunately, it's going to be a lot of new stuff.
Okay, that's fine.
But actually, no, we'll go back to old stuff. I really love the original Phoenix, Dark Phoenix saga, because it is intense. It's when a lot of X-Men characters like Wolverine first get their like big moments, because it all starts out when we get introduced to the Hellfire Club, and there's this one point where all of the X-Men get taken out by the Hellfire Club except Wolverine. And it, like, the last panel of the issue is, like, Wolverine, like, drawn so beautifully, and he's in this sewer, and it's like, now it's my turn. And he just goes back, and he, like, just takes out everyone from the Hellfire Club. Probably my favorite scene with Wolverine in that book is he's going against I forget what, like, I know his powers, but I don't remember the Hellfire Club's name. But what he makes it so, he increases the weight and increases the effect of gravity on someone, so they just fall to the ground and they can't get up. Well, Wolverine jumps at him, and he instinctively does his power, but he doesn't realize that Wolverine's on top. So Wolverine just crashes through the floor right onto this guy and takes him out, and it gets so epic. And then with the whole Dark Phoenix saga, where she just loses control and just in one instant she's so powerful, she just destroys an entire planet. And it's like not even like a thought. Like it's just, oh, whoops, I accidentally destroyed a planet because I'm just so powerful and my power is just surging everywhere. And it's just such a crazy book that, like, has this really emotional ending with the death of Jean Grey. And it's really a defining moment for all of the X-Men books. And it's kind of really shaped what comes after it. And, yeah, sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. Keep going, actually.
I was going to say, and then jumping ahead, way ahead, I really love Joss Whedon's run on the X-Men when he did Astonishing X-Men back in, I believe it was 2004, but it's a really interesting book that at the first few issues delve a lot into just the day-to-day life at the Xavier Academy with Kitty Pryde rejoining the X-Men and taking on a professor role. And it's always interesting because she, back in the early X-Men days, was always the child character. So it's really nice to see him take her and develop her a little more and make her into an older, more role model figure. And that there is some crazy stuff he does in that book. Like at one point, the Danger Room, it's revealed that the Danger Room is a sentient AI that Professor Xavier enslaved so that they could do all of these crazy simulations to the biggest amount of accuracy and so everything would work. And eventually, since Professor Xavier is not in the book, so I think he's gone at the time it was written, and it escapes and loses and becomes a entity of its own and just calls itself Danger. And it's like a big, really cool fight that the X-Men have to try to outsmart the Danger Room and just it with no holds barred. And it's a really cool book. And then more recently, a lot of the stuff that Bendis is doing in Uncanny X-Men and All New X-Men is really interesting because they've basically switched it so that Cyclops, who after in Avengers versus X-Men, got a hold of the Phoenix Force, and he just goes crazy, and he ends up killing Professor Xavier. So he eventually, at the end of that book, his powers are all out of sync and all wonky. So he kind of serves as his own mutant team, and he basically becomes Magneto's Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And Magneto is on the team too, but it's really interesting to see Wolverine be the one who's in charge of the Jean Grey school and who's taking on the Professor X legacy, and Cyclops, who is going the more militant route like Magneto would. So it's a really cool way to do it.
Yeah, because I always wondered why, because occasionally I'd see shirts that would say Cyclops was right. And I'm like, what the hell are people talking about? Yeah, this was one event I kind of wish I'd followed, actually.
Yeah, it's a really interesting. If you want to, like, just pick up on it in more recent issues, you should check out the Battle of the Atom crossover that I mentioned earlier. It's really good, and it has all of the main X-Men team and kind of has them all introduced pretty well. And there's even, like, a future X-Men introduced. It's a cool storyline. You should see if you can check it out.
For like some of the kind of newer stuff of X-Men, I've only started getting back into it. I'm actually reading Nightcrawler, actually.
Nightcrawler is really good.
I'm really enjoying it. And it's kind of me dipping my foot back into the X-Men universe. I'm also reading Magneto as well.
Oh, I love that book. That comic series is so good.
I'm trying to think if there's any other X-Men books I'm reading. No, that's it, because for some reason, I want to avoid shit like Wolverine and all that, simply because it's been done. And I'm glad to see other X-Men characters get their due. So, I'm trying to think of other X-Men things in the comics I'd love to talk about. I was really curious about the Ultimate X-Men.
Yeah, I'm curious about the Ultimate X-Men, too. The only stuff I've read with the Ultimate X-Men comes from the big crossovers and from their kind of intertwining with Ultimate Spider-Man, because I've read all of the Ultimate Spider-Man stuff. And Kitty Pryde is really interesting in the Ultimate Universe because she ends up hooking up with Spider-Man. So her and Spider-Man are in a relationship for a large portion of the Ultimate Spider-Man run, and she eventually continuing the trend of women X-Men characters beating Galactus. Most recently, she punched Galactus in the face because she got supersized and like messed up his World Eater machine in the recent mega crossover Cataclysm, which was just having the 616 main Marvel Universe Galactus come to the Ultimate Universe and kill everyone. It's a really cool book, and Kitty Pryde really gets to shine in that one. And also, Ultimatum is a crazy book. Have you heard of Ultimatum at
all? It's where, like, Magneto kills, like, half of, like, New York or something.
Yeah, and the Blob is in that, and the Blob eats Wasp. You know the X-Men Wasp? He eats her.
That's
he just
hilarious.
Eats her, and it's really gruesome. And, like, Ant-Man, like, comes in and just freaks out and goes giant size and just crushes Blob like a pimple. It's insane.
See, you know, that's another character that I have always appreciated, probably because I am a fat, you know, a fatty myself. I love the Blob. I love Fred Dukes.
Nothing moves the Blob.
Well, that, and now he's like some fitness guru, which is hilarious, because after the Powers, or after M-Day, and there's something to talk about, the House of M.
House of M, oh my.
This was a book that basically, the Scarlet Witch has gone nuts, gone off the reservation, and the X-Men and Magneto and other people are trying to decide, what do they want to do with her? Because she's almost too dangerous to be left alive. Because her powers alter reality. It's not just her luck fields anymore. She can change things on a cosmic scale. So they're like, I don't know, man. She almost killed us. And, you know, she brought her dead husband, or she brought Hawkeye back from the dead, and all these other crazy things. And I think she turned Vision into Ultron or something like that. I can't remember the specifics. But it turns into this huge thing where there's like an alternate reality where Wolverine wakes up and has memories of this reality, where mutants are the dominant faction now. The House of M is literally Magneto and his family. And then there's the M-Day. Once again, involving Scarlet Witch. Like I said, I'm probably getting the particulars of this wrong. I haven't read this book in like 5 years. Where Scarlet Witch says, no more mutants. And every mutant on Earth, except 198 of them, less than 1%, are left with their powers. So everybody becomes depowered.
Yeah, Jubilee becomes a vampire.
Oh, like, yeah. She becomes a character named Wondra, and she gets, like, these techno power gloves that simulate her powers. I think she becomes part of the New Warriors for a while, actually.
Whoa, really? That sounds awesome.
Yeah, like, if I'm remembering that right. And speaking of the Blob, he lost his power, so now he has, like, a shit ton of loose skin. He tries to kill himself, but the blade can't cut him. And he's like, oh my god, I want to die, I want to die, I want to die. And eventually, as many mutants as they can find are gathered up and sent to Xavier School, guarded by Sentinels. Now, they're human-piloted Sentinels. I think they're called the Sentinel Ones, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
And yeah, there's that. And eventually, obviously, there's the mutant known as Hope, and that more mutants are being born again. But I kind of liked what they did with that, because it basically reset the fact that you couldn't swing around a bat without hitting a mutant in the Marvel Universe. And some of the powers just got absolutely ridiculous. So, yeah, that's a lot of the comics, the X-Men-specific stuff that I remember. And then, you know, there were the big events like Civil War, and how, what was it, Cobalt Man or Nitro blew up Stamford, Connecticut. I can't remember who.
Yep.
And then you'd had pro-human or pro-registration for heroes and anti-registration, and that obviously changed the face of the Marvel Universe, and stuff like Breakout on the Raft. Like, a lot of really big things happened. Trying to think if there's anything else in specific I wanted to mention. No, that's it. So, I guess, kind of moving this train right along, let's talk about the movies. Hugely excited for this. I remember, before Hugh Jackman was cast as Wolverine, the guy they were talking to was a guy named, Dougray Scott. And the only movie I can remember him in was a Drew Barrymore movie called Ever After.
Oh, God.
Which was coincidentally my first press kit I ever got.
Oh, wow.
Because I won it in, like, a radio contest. So, the girliest movie ever. So, yeah, he was going to be cast. And I'm thinking, I don't know, he looks kind of, But, obviously, when we saw the claws come out and the way that he carried himself, Hugh Jackman made that movie. Then casting Patrick Stewart as Professor Xavier, that was a no-brainer. Ian McKellen as Magneto. I'm thinking, all right, why not? He's a little bit older. I thought Halle Berry as Storm was really good casting. Let me see who else was in there, too, that I'm trying to remember. James Marsden as Cyclops, who for a long time was my favorite X-Men. Oh, my God. The X-Men animated series. I loved him, but we'll talk about that. And I think... Oh, and Tyler Mane as Sabretooth. So the big wrestler, I think he was from WWE or WCW. As Sabretooth, the big rrr, and then Ray Park, Darth Maul, as Toad. The only time he has ever been cool. In the first X-Men movie, I remember going to theaters and people were just blown away. I remember even seeing the trailers for that, and this is when the web was starting to get into promotions for stuff. There was like the official X-Men website, you could watch the trailer. They'd be like, do you have the mutant gene? And all this crap. Like, ugh. I loved the first one, even though when you go back and watch it, it's kind of boring, I find. But it was director Bryan Singer kind of proved that, you know what, comic book movies can be awesome, because we weren't that far removed from Batman and Robin, and nobody seems to remember Blade is a comic book movie, for whatever reason. So people were starting to say, all right, they can be taken seriously and they can be done right. And the story was more or less focused on Rogue, Anna Paquin, which was an odd choice to me, because the Rogue I knew, once again, animated series, I expected her to be in her post-stealing Miss Marvel's powers, where she could do all this crazy crap, and in the movie all she can do is steal powers and be jailbait.
Right.
So,
jailbait.
Well, she was really young. what were your impressions of the first X-Men movie?
I love the X-Men movies. They're probably where I get most of my X-Men knowledge from, just because they simplified so much X-Men history and made a really tight story that you didn't need to know a lot about X-Men to just sit down and enjoy the movie, which is awesome, because the comics, as we've talked about, are just really hard to get into. It's really hard to just pick a spot and go with it. And I think the X-Men movies really started off really strong with the first movie.
The next X-Men movie, X2, was considered to be the best of the original three of them. Basically involving William Stryker, the guy that gave Wolverine his adamantium claws and all that shit. We learn more about the Weapon X program. They kind of hint at it that Lady Deathstrike was his ex-girlfriend or something, which I always thought that was a really odd choice to have her as just a hench person.
Yeah, it's weird. Oh, did you see, this is hopping forward a few movies, did you catch the Lady Deathstrike kind of reference in the newest X-Men Days of Future Past?
I want to say I did, but remind me.
At one point, one of the Sentinels uses, like, her claws.
Yes,
exactly,
yes. Yeah,
to take someone out. I thought that was really cool.
And it involves Stryker's son, who is a mutant himself, who evidently can mind control you or something.
Yippers. Creepy, creepy kid.
And basically, X-Men United unites evil mutants and good mutants to let's go kick some ass. I also liked how they introduced Iceman and Pyro in this, because Pyro is another one of my favorite kind of secondary villains.
Yeah, he seems kind of better in the comics than he did in the movies, because he didn't really do much in the movies other than just be a dick.
I remember he dies in the comics because of the legacy virus, I think, kills him, or something like that, and he dies doing something halfway decent or something.
That's nice.
I think. I'm not 100% sure of that one. They were actually going to have Sentinels in X-Men 2. And there are little Easter eggs, too, where they talk about Project Wide Awake, you can see names like Remy LeBeau pop up on computer screens. And I think Sam Guthrie is another one that pops up on a screen. I think he's Cannonball or Boom Boom or something. And yeah,
Boom Boom.
Yeah.
That really is a bad name.
Yeah, not the most heroic name I can think of.
I made a Boom Boom.
Another person that they had in that movie, like I was just mentioning Sentinels. They were going to be these balls that rolled up, and they would roll out and they'd form they come the Sentinels and they unfold. Which I kind of thought that was, I'm like, you know what? I'd be okay with that. Sure, they're not the giant purple robots I wanted, but that's kind of cool. I'm actually kind of okay with this. And then they hinted at the Phoenix when Jean Grey stops Alkali Lake from killing everybody and she's crushed by the water.
Oh, yeah, that's a great ending.
Yeah. And I kind of like, all right, that's cool. They're going to talk about the Phoenix in number three.
Number three comes, I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
Yeah, Vinnie Jones, the Juggernaut.
Oh my god, see, that movie. Okay, I am going to say something right now that's going to be unpopular. I kind of enjoy X-Men 3.
It's a guilty pleasure for me.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the same for me. It's ridiculous, and I just love all of the ridiculous, crazy shit it does.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that there's a crap ton of mutants, and some of them are really cool, but some of them get, like, put into, like, background cameos that are, like, bloody useless. I thought they treated...
Speaking of cameos, did you know that Trask is in X3?
Yeah, he's a black guy or something, isn't he?
Yep, he's a big black man.
Thinking, that's not Peter Dinklage. but then again, in the comics, he was a white guy. But yeah, there's... so many things wrong in X-Men 3. What was it called? Oh, The Last Stand. But there were some good parts. I liked Ellen Page as Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, I was glad they brought her back because she was the best part of that movie.
I liked how they brought back Daniel Cudmore as Colossus. So you know what? I was kind of okay. That there were some pretty neat things in that movie. It was just executed terribly. Rebecca Romijn as Mystique getting depowered.
That was disappointed.
I was really hoping we'd see her naked.
Rebecca Romijn as Mystique may be the most attractive character.
Although I like Jennifer Lawrence as the young version.
Jennifer Lawrence is the second most attractive person.
And then Vinnie Jones, like I said, as the Juggernaut. See, I would be okay with him being the Juggernaut, but the costume looks so stupid.
Yeah.
It looked like bondage gear.
I really cannot believe they went with the I'm the Juggernaut bitch from that internet video.
I love that. Don't you know who I am? I'm the Juggernaut, bitch! I love that. The best part of that video. I love it. I've actually been saying this since I first saw this back in 2007. I was like, silly bitch, your weapons do not harm me. I love saying that during Titanfall matches, and it pisses people off. Oh my god. Yeah, and it's just so stupid. It's like, bitch, you cannot. What are you doing this? You tickle me. Like, seriously, go on YouTube, people, and go type in I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. And it's the X-Men cartoon with a guy dubbing Juggernaut. And it's slightly racist, but kind of hilarious. It's a terrible, terrible thing. So, yeah, X-Men 3, it gets so ridiculous. And they treat one of the biggest storylines in the X-Men comics with such disrespect. I mean, they melt Cyclops and Professor X at one point. And then it's like, oh, we have the cure for mutancy. Party on. Hey, I'm Rogue. Yeah, take that shit. Which, for her, I get that. That makes sense. That and Anna Paquin is no longer jailbait, so let's... probably shouldn't continue this. Someone will accuse me of sexism or something. Anyway, I tapped that ass. I'm just saying. I'm a red-blooded man. I'm sorry. But anyway, and then Magneto gets depowered, and then that post-credits scene where hello, Moira, and Professor X is somehow alive again.
Yeah, so do you want to know, do you want to know what is said in the commentary about that?
Yes!
I do. Okay, so Brett Ratner did a commentary, and apparently that is Professor X's twin that was born as a vegetable that he kept alive just in case he would need it. And that's who he comes in at the end of the movie.
Wow, that's...
Yep, because he stole all of his psychic brain force in the womb and just left him a vegetable and was like, eh, let's keep him alive just in case I need him.
No. And then we had the next X-Men movie, which a lot of people were really excited about. Like, all right, we're going to have a solo Wolverine movie. It's going to be awesome.
Oh my gosh.
And then we got...
Wolverine with his mouth sewn shut and blades that come out of his arms that are physically longer than his arms, so that if he were to actually have those in his arms, he would not be able to bend his elbows.
Yeah, we have Wolverine Origins, and this was... Who was the guy who did this?
Satan, I believe his name is.
Yes. you may know him by many other names as... Beelzebub. But yeah, this movie, they somehow made the CG worse. Like Wolverine has CG claws in this, and it's just, it comes across as terrible. Now, there are parts of this movie, this is another guilty pleasure for me. I like the fact that Sabretooth is now, help me out.
Lee Schreiber.
Yeah, I love that.
Liev Schreiber as Sabretooth. Oh, and the guy who directed this is Gavin Hood.
See, that's who I thought it was. I wasn't sure, though. I think he did just music videos prior to this, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah. So I like the fact that they brought in Silver Fox. I like the fact that there's, Maverick, who's one of my favorite, minor cameo characters I saw in the animated series. I just thought he was cool. Plus Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. You could not have better casting for that. You couldn't.
If they had done it right. I really, really hope they just go and make that Deadpool solo movie.
I've heard this rumor recently, and I've heard it picking up steam, that the Deadpool movie will have Ryan Reynolds in it, and he's going back and visiting that reality to kill that Deadpool.
Oh, that sounds kind of hilarious, actually.
And it would totally make sense, because, you know, Deadpool is... Deadpool. I like the fact they had Deadpool in it. The guy from the Black Eyed Peas as John Wraith, I think was the character's name.
Sure.
And he was like...
Let's go with that.
He was a teleporter. A lot of people are excited because, hey, Gambit's in the movie, and he's in it for all of like 5 minutes. And it's just... It's really sloppily put together, and the greatest Deus Ex Machina moment in it is, I have magical amnesia causing bullets.
Amnesia adamantium bullets.
Yep, just because, you know, reasons.
Why not?
And they also have cameos by the younger X-Men, kind of, with a person who's likely Emma Frost, and CG from 1993, Patrick Stewart. It's terrible. And ultimately, yeah, X-Men Origins was shit. I remember seeing this. I actually hung out with the Screw Attack guys when this movie came out. I was in Texas for some reason. I think I was doing Handsome Tom's wedding or something. And I went with Craig, Jose, Destin, and all of them to the Texas Movie Grill, which is a really cool idea. It's a restaurant that is a theater. So you can have a full meal delivered to you while you're watching a movie. Really, really, really cool shit. And I remember walking out of this theater, and it was almost as if God himself was like, I'm so sorry. The heavens just opened up in one of the worst rainstorms I've ever seen in my life. Like, this parking lot flooded in under, like, 5 minutes. I was
Sounds awesome.
Oh, my.
They're probably like, we must... bury the sins of this movie.
It was so terrible. Like, I was up... the water was up to my knees. Wow. That's how quickly it came down. Like, holy crap. But yeah, that movie, utterly friggin' terrible. And then... time moved forward. And we got... it was First Class, then The Wolverine. Yeah. And then we got X-Men First Class. This movie, I did not expect for it to be as good as it was. X-Men First Class basically tells the story of how Xavier and Magneto met, how they were friends. And before this, they had planned to do a Magneto Origins movie, which just never came to be, which more or less was lumped into this one. And it featured Michael Fassbender as Magneto, James McAvoy as Xavier, Jennifer Lawrence, and Hugh Jackman in a 2-second cameo, which is hilarious, where he just basically tells them to fuck off. And this one, it really made it look cool, because it was set during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and everybody's favorite bad guy, Kevin Bacon, as Sebastian Shaw, the guy who can absorb energy directed against him. So in theory, if you blew him up in a bomb, he could direct that shit at you. And does. And the movie was just really, really well done. You got to see mutants you'd never seen before, like Banshee, Havoc. Although I'm pretty sure Darwin was made up for the movie. Azazel, who's like, I think, Nightcrawler's dad or something. Yep.
He's Nightcrawler's dad, and Mystique is Nightcrawler's mom.
Which means... because Azazel... Wait, I don't think he died during the fight
in that movie. No, Azazel is... spoilers for Days of Future Past. Azazel is unceremoniously killed off-screen.
Along with Banshee.
He's mentioned to have died by Magneto when they're in the plane, and we see Oliver Bolivar's Trask has him on file somewhere, like, dissecting him.
Yeah, he's dead. Emma Frost is dead. Emma Frost is in this movie as well, in X-Men First Class.
Yes.
Who is she played by? January Jones? Is
that January Jones, I think so.
God damn. And you also meet very young Moira McTaggart, who's no way she's that young in X-Men The Last Stand.
Yeah, there's no way that works at all.
Yeah, so X-Men First Class, in my opinion, was meant to be the reboot that we deserved. And it more or less is now. And you see how Xavier got paralyzed. And we meet Beast, who is Nicholas Hoult, the kid from Warm Bodies. Surprisingly good actor. I really enjoy his shit, actually. And honestly, everybody loved First Class. I actually got invited out to a press event by Fox when this movie came out. They took us out to this Cirque du Soleil shit. And they're like, see what real mutants can do and all this crazy crap. And they're like, climb.
That's a really weird marketing.
It was really cool because they're like spinning fire, climbing on the ceiling like Spider-Man. I'm like, holy crap, these people are talented. But it was really cool shit. Then finally, we get The Wolverine, which came out last July. And I didn't much care for this movie in a lot of ways. It happens post X-Men 3. Wolverine is trying to live by himself, be alone, loner, whatever. And we get the Silver Samurai Viper, who's a guy that nobody cares, or is a villainous that no one cares about. And it's supposed to adapt his time in Madripoor in Japan. It's got some interesting things in it, but the big thing that people are going to remember is Wolverine gets his antimantium his claws cut off, and Magneto and Professor Xavier stop him in an airport saying, Logan, we need your help. And it brings us to our final movie, X-Men Days of Future Past.
Oh, yeah.
The best X-Men movie in the franchise, I think.
It's up there with me. I have to rewatch X2 and X-Men First Class, but it's definitely one of the best, if not the best.
I think it's the best paced. You're never bored in it.
Yeah, that's true. I've seen the movie twice, actually, in theaters, and both times I was completely drawn in and wasn't bored in the least.
Yeah, like, when I saw it for the first time about a week ago, I missed about 5 minutes because I had to go to the bathroom, but it does so many things right. Basically, takes the essence of the X-Men Days of Future Past storyline, adapts a few different things, like it was supposed to be Kitty Pryde that goes back in time, not Wolverine, in it, and they explain how the powers work a little bit better, and it's not Bolivar Trask that gets assassinated, it's supposed to be Senator Robert Kelly.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really, really close in certain ways. The Sentinels are more like Nimrod as opposed to just these purple robots, which they are in the 1970s, and they can adapt to any power, and the movie's quite violent.
Oh, yeah. Like, they take out some of the most beloved X-Men in very unceremonious ways. They do not farewell, that's for sure.
Yeah, like Colossus gets ripped in half, Iceman has his head twisted off, Sunspot or Sunfire gets basically his head disintegrated, mm-hmm, Blink gets impaled,
and then Blink gets stabbed like 7 times.
It's pretty friggin' nuts how they do some of these things, and it's just, it's really well done. And then when they send the movie back to the 70s, where they send Wolverine back in time, but they say, my friend Spoony put it in a really good, in kind of a really interesting way, and it makes sense. The clock is always running in San Dimas, which is a reference to Bill and Ted, because you can go back in time, that's fine, but where you're from, time is still moving forward. So if you're gone a day from the time, from now, you're still gone a day in the past. And things are happening concurrently, which part of Kitty Pryde's powers is, oh yeah, try not to think any negative thoughts. And he's like, what? You're like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, how the hell am I supposed to do that?
Yeah, like, yeah, it makes me harder to hold on to. Like, all right, fine. But yeah, ultimately, it's just, it's really good. There's lots of references to the other movies, to the X-Men universe. Everybody thought Quicksilver was going to suck. Everybody was wrong. It was amazing how well they pulled Quicksilver off.
I love Quicksilver in Days of Future Past.
I did not expect Kick-Ass to do such... No, wait, yeah, no, it wasn't Kick-Ass. It's
Kick-Ass's friend.
Yeah, Kick-Ass's friend to do as well in this part as he did. It was... And they even made his costume make sense when he puts down the goggles so he doesn't get shit in his eyes. Like, all right, that's legit. That makes sense. And I don't know, there was just so much that went right with this movie. And then the fact that the 70 Sentinels look to be a good interpretation of the big purple robots from the cartoon series, which the only thing I wished those Sentinels had said, as if they hired the guy from the X-Men animated series, I wanted just one halt mutant. I just wanted just one in that robotic voice.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool.
Didn't get it, but whatever. Overall, very, very solid flick. And it wasn't super Wolverine-centric. Everybody had moments to shine.
Yeah, exactly. And like, even at the end, like, Wolverine kind of gets taken out, like, pretty easily. And normally, the X-Men movies kind of fall prey to them just being a Wolverine show. So it was nice that everyone got good moments.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, totally worth your time to go and see it. And then the end credit scene, so here's our big spoiler, it's Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, holy shit. Oh, my God. Let's just say skeet, skeet, skeet.
And it's about time.
And everybody in the audience is like, who the hell's that? And I'm like, I'm like, all right, for those of you that care to listen, and I gave about a 2-minute explanation of who he was. I'm that guy. But totally kick ass. Amazing movie. Even the limited edition for this set is Magneto's helmet, and it looks really, really cool. So, looking forward to when that comes out later on this year. So, let's finally get to talking about the cartoons for this.
Okay, so Pride of the X-Men. Let's just talk about that for 2 hours, because it is the greatest cartoon show ever. The one episode cartoon show that has Wolverine as an Australian and has the greatest theme song of all time.
Yeah, although the animation is amazing in it, though.
X-Men, X-Men.
Yeah, this was supposed to be a pilot for X-Men, and it was done, I think instead of doing another episode of like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, they took the budget from that show and put together the X-Men pilot. It was narrated by Stan Lee, though. And the X-Men animated, the part of the X-Men would air as a special every now and again on various channels. And it just never caught on, which is, thank God. It's terrible. Some really cool animation, though. Like, the intro scene is really, really neat. They have Colossus is in there. I think Dazzler's in there, too. Nightcrawler, Wolverine, Cyclops versus Magneto, Pyro, Toad, the Blob, and Emma Frost. And it's ridiculous. Go track it down on YouTube. Really, really, really easy. And that's what the X-Men arcade game was actually based upon, the artwork for this, not the X-Men 92 series, because this came out in arcades in, I think, 90 or 91. and it was either a three-player cab, four-player cab, or a six-player cab, and it was on double-wide monitors, which is really cool. Now, one of the fun things about this game, it has quite the legacy at the convention known as MAGFest, which happens in Virginia every January. Someone always brings an X-Men arcade machine. And if you want to get attention during MAGFest, everybody who's walking down the halls or going in the elevator, you want attention, and you'll always get echoes of this. Oh! Yeah, everybody does that, and you'll get 5 or 6 or 20 people doing that right after you.
That sounds awesome.
It's amazing. And I remember a friend of mine, I don't talk to her much anymore, had said to me, "The Colossi are restless." And you couldn't have picked a better phrase for that, honestly. But yeah, awesome. It was quite cool. And then the X-Men animated series from Fox. I would not miss this for the world. Is the longest running Marvel animated series.
It's how many seasons did it get? Five?
5 and 78 episodes, I think.
Wow, that's a lot.
Ran longer than Spider-Man, longer than basically any Marvel property, and I think still holds that record now. Although I think
nothing's going to get close to it because they just keep rebooting TV shows now.
Although, it's not that the series that followed it were bad, but, well, we will talk about that. I mean, the X-Men Fox animated show, there are actually two different versions of the pilot. They actually aired an unfinished one to get people interested, and it was delayed by a couple of weeks or a couple months, if I remember correctly. But I remember when it premiered with the episodes Night of the Sentinels, and this is when the comic book was relaunching, or it was right during that time. It was a hot property, and they had the best voice cast. They have the guy that I know the most is Catherall Dodd, who is, to me, the voice of Wolverine, who will always be the voice of Wolverine. Then they had Allison Court, who you would know as Luna, and Claire Redfield. She was Jubilee.
Nice.
And she's the character that I've taken the most liking to over the years, because I think her voice and her attitude just really suited the character, and honestly, it was just, I found her voice really cute at the time. So, the series adapted many popular things. In fact, talking about the Phoenix and Dark Phoenix, the stories were so close to the original, they actually had to give Chris Claremont credit in the episodes.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, in the episodes opening credits, because it stuck fairly close to the source material. And it was a 5-part event. Like, they aired this for a week straight on the Fox Kids block. So this was airing opposite Batman the Animated Series for a while. And yeah, it was like, for the next 5 days, we give you the Phoenix Saga. And it was so cool. I've mentioned this on multiple podcasts before, but I used to have one of the big satellites. I figured out where the Fox feeds were going to the affiliates, just by wandering transponder channels really late at night. So I could watch the entire Saturday morning cartoon block from 1 a.m. until 4 a.m. if I was willing to stay up late. So I'd watch awesome. So I'd watch X-Men in the middle on the middle of Friday night. I'd go home, I'd watch my X-Files, and I'd watch this. And there are just so many characters I enjoy. I loved the guy they got to do Gambit. I loved Rogue. Bishop was one of my favorite characters, who I love. He has this little music sting that goes everywhere he goes. It's this little kind of bluegrassy thing. The only way I can really describe it. And all their costumes were from their 90s incarnation. And it did so many things right. There were very rarely bad episodes of it. I mean, there were a few you could skip. The fifth season had some weaker ones, like Jubilee's story time, and even Graduation Day is kind of stupid, which is the series finale. But overall, it maintains such a high level of quality that it's still revered by a lot of fans today. I know you can get the complete series on DVD, not Blu-ray, right now. I think it's like $14 a season. Totally worth it. It's streaming on Canadian Netflix right now, but not American. So if you want to go check that out. There was X-Men Evolution, which was a reboot.
Yeah, I actually really like X-Men Evolution. I think it's kind of an underrated X-Men cartoon. I like Spike in that show. They really kind of do more with him, Storm's brother, and it was a pretty decent show, I thought.
Yeah, I started watching it a little while ago, probably in the last couple months, actually. And yeah, I really enjoy it, actually. I thought it was a lot more fun than it was going to be.
Yeah, exactly. And I like Rogue in that show in particular. I watched X-Men Evolution like pretty consistently when it was coming out, so that one always has a close place in my heart.
I saw it on Netflix. They only have the first season though, but I thought it was really well done, actually. Yeah, there wasn't a lot about X-Men Evolution I didn't like. The only animated series that I haven't seen is Wolverine and the X-Men. I know it ran for one season.
Wolverine and the X-Men is surprisingly good.
I remember Mike Laidman told me to get it, and I did pick it up for about, I think it was $10.
Oh, that's a good price to pick that up. Because I remember my friend just lent it to me once, and he's like, hey, man, you got to check out this X-Men show. And I'm like, all right, another X-Men cartoon. And then I watch it, and I'm like, this is super cool. It's a show that really, really should have got a second season, because it teased Age of Apocalypse. And basically, the show's premise is Wolverine gets a message from Professor X from the future, who's in the future, and Professor X is put in a coma in the first episode, and he is messaging Wolverine from, like, I think 20 years in the future when he wakes up from his coma to find the world just, like, destroyed, and the whole show is Wolverine trying to prevent that future from coming to fruition, and at the end of the season, it's discovered that he stops that future from happening, but he ends up setting it up so that the Age of Apocalypse can happen. And that was a big teaser for the last episode, and I was really mad when they didn't get another season.
Yeah, that kind of sucks. I'd say the X-Men have been treated very well in the world of anime outside of Pride of the X-Men, which is kind of more of a curiosity than it is anything else.
Yeah. I love Pride of the X-Men, but I can't pretend it's good.
So the last thing we will talk about today is the X-Men video games. Almost all of them are really awesome, actually.
Aside from some of the early LJN ones.
Yeah, the LJN ones were crap, because you couldn't tell what the fuck was going on.
Yeah.
I
really fondly remember, from my birthday one year, getting the X-Men fighting game. I think it was for the PS1. There was an X-Men fighting game.
X-Men
and
Mutant
just
Academy.
Getting my ass kicked by all of my friends who were way better than me at that game.
Yep, I remember when that game came out. I remember they even had codes that could unlock the X-Men uniforms from the movie.
That's pretty cool.
There was the X-Men War. Actually, one of the first X-Men spin-off games was built upon Super Street Fighter II Turbo, X-Men Children of the Atom.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Which was the first solo X-Men game featuring Psylocke, Colossus, Cyclops, Wolverine, Storm, let me see, Iceman, then you had Spiral, really odd choice, the Sentinel, you couldn't play as Juggernaut, but he was in it, same with Magneto, Omega Red, and I think I'm probably missing somebody. In fact, I'm almost certain of it. But yeah, it's probably one of my favorite fighting games. Before that, we had Marvel Superheroes War of the Gems. And then that led to X-Men versus Street Fighter, which is fantastic. Then we had Marvel Superheroes versus Street Fighter. Finally, Marvel versus Capcom. Marvel vs. Capcom 2, Marvel vs. Capcom 3. The fantastic X-Men Legends games.
I love those games. Those are so much fun.
Which are like kind of like this role-playing game, Marvel Ultimate Alliance, I guess you could call that. One game that was surprisingly good was X-Men Wolverine Origins for the Xbox 360 and PS3.
Yeah, wasn't that game like super bloody?
Oh, God, yeah.
That's awesome, because that's like nothing like the movie was. The movie was like pretty tame.
Well, that you could get your ass kicked, and you could regenerate.
That's awesome.
Like your skin would grow back if you were blown back to a skeleton. Like, it was ridiculous how fun that was. I mean, the Sentinel fight was annoying as shit, but it was still very, very, very cool. Trying to think of other X-Men games. There's the arcade game. What more can I say? Welcome to Die, X-Chickens.
Yeah, Welcome to Die. There's X-Men Destiny. Didn't you really hate that game?
See, publicly, yes. Publicly.
Okay.
It's a guilty pleasure. It really is. I actually remembered, and here's a little bit of a peer behind the curtain look for me, is I played this game. I reviewed it. I talked to the development team before Silicon Knights went away. And I said to them, hey, can I ask you some questions off the record? And they're like, okay, sure. Why does this game suck? And the guy I was speaking to was like, you know what? We ran out of time. And we wanted to put so much more in. I'm like, where are all these cool sequences? Where's this, that, and the other thing? And because there's no real difference between choosing good or evil, whether you side with Magneto or side with the X-Men.
Right.
You basically, the last boss is the first boss.
What?
Just recolored purple. You're basically fighting Shockwave from Transformers.
Oh my god, that sounds awful.
Yeah, you're fighting Bastion, I think it is. It had some really cool ideas. It fell victim to it. Now, to find a copy of this, you probably should, because Silicon Knights lost a lawsuit involving this game. I think it was for the use of the Unreal 3 engine or whatever. So, stores are supposed to destroy copies of this and Two Human.
What? Yeah. Really?
Yeah, and because of games like this, Silicon Knights is no longer around. They were a game studio in St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada. They did Two Human, X-Men Destiny. Their most remembered...
They were out of St. Catharines? Yeah. Wow, that's so sad that they were lost then.
Oh, God, yeah. They were most remembered for doing Metal Gear Solid, The Twin Snakes, which was the GameCube port, which is fantastic, of the first Metal Gear, and for Eternal Darkness, Sandy's Requiem. Fantastic stuff. Yeah. There are some really good X-Men games out there, so I really recommend you people go check them out. Like I said, definitely recommend Wolverine Origins, X-Men Legends, the downloadable X-Men arcade game, which I don't know whether it's still available, though. I think its license may have expired.
I think it got taken off.
Yeah, so that's unfortunate. But, yeah, we've talked about X-Men for almost 2 hours.
Because it's that good.
Because it is that good. Or, well, I guess not 2 hours, an hour and 14 minutes. I'm reading my clock wrong. So I'm stupid, but I hope you guys have had fun talking with us today. Andrew, thank you for coming out to help me do this and for writing Just the Facts. I definitely appreciate it.
No worries. Always glad to be on here and love talking about the X-Men.
All right, guys. So next month, or this month, technically, we're going to be talking about the Bayformers. That's right. We're going to be talking Transformers, just the Michael Bay versions. This movie series has now run into 4 movies. We're going to talk about the good, bad, and the ugly, and whatever else in between. I really got to go to the bathroom. So until next time, guys, we have been...
Andrew Roebuck.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, make mine Marvel.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd, but I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh my gosh, freak! Die! Holy crap! Whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Prono Bozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember...
Lower your shields and surrender your listenership.